This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
Joining me in the studio today is Professor Valery Nakarekov from the University of Warwick. Mm-hmm. And you've just given a talk about waves and oscillations in the solar corona. So can I start by asking you, what makes up the solar corona? What actually is the solar corona?
So the solar corona is the upper part, so the uppermost part of the solar atmosphere. So where the temperature, for some still not very well understood reason, increases. So the temperature of this part of the solar atmosphere is about 1 million Kelvin in comparison with the temperature of the surface of the sun, which is about 6,000 Kelvin, so much, much lower. And because of this high temperature, so the gas of the atmosphere is almost fully ionized, meaning so the corona of the sun is the plasma shell of the sun. In the Earth atmosphere, we have the ionosphere, so the ionized part of the Earth atmosphere. So the similar part of the solar atmosphere is the corona. But in contrast with the Earth ionosphere, the corona of the sun is very extended. So it actually begins at the height of a few thousand kilometers from the surface of the sun and extends further up to the heliosphere. And actually, so we can say that the Earth is embedded in the corona of the sun. So we live in this plasma of the solar corona, which is very hot and magnetized.
So the solar corona is pretty huge then. And do we know why it's so hot in there?
No, it's one of the enigmatic questions. enigmatic problems of modern solar physics I mentioned. So the coronal heating problem has been on the table for a very long time. So about 30 years, possibly, people keep trying to answer this question. Possibly it's connected with the waves and oscillations which I mentioned today. So the deposition of energy, so which is, carried by the waves in the plasma, so maybe the source of this heating. But it's still, so the jury is still very much out.
Okay, so you mentioned these waves and oscillations. What are they waves and oscillations of? You said of the plasma, is that right?
Yes, it's a plasma and the magnetic field. And in this, plasma, so there is a very interesting physical property, which we call a frozen-in magnetic field property. So meaning, so we can't distinguish between the motion of the plasma and the motion of the magnetic field. If we displace some piece of plasma, it drags the magnetic field with it. And the other way around, if we somehow change the magnetic configuration, this change causes the motion of the plasma. So hence this oscillations is the combined oscillations or perturbations of the magnetic field and of the plasma, meaning plasma flows and perturbations of the density of the plasma.
Okay, so what actually causes these oscillations and waves?
Actually, so any dynamical processes can cause oscillations and waves. It's like what I used today in my talk. So the analogy, if you have a pond, we can throw a stone or we can do something else. So I mean, any dynamical process causes perturbation, development of the perturbation in a form of waves propagating outwards the localized source. So because it's a compressible and elastic medium.
So how do you actually go about seeing these? Is this something that you can see in the optical? Do you have to look in different wavelengths?
Well, actually, the corona is very hot, so hence it's very difficult to see it in the optical band only during eclipses. So we have more or less acceptable images and movies of the solar corona. But routinely we use space-borne EUV telescopes, so operating the extreme ultraviolet band, so which corresponds to the temperature of the corona, so it's about 1 million Kelvin. Or we use radio observations, so using ground-based radio telescopes and radio interferometers.
Do you see a lot of these waves and oscillations? Are they quite common, or is it something that's quite rare to come across?
It used to be an exotic phenomenon, 15 years ago when all this began, but now it's routine observations, because now the resolution of modern telescopes, especially telescopes specifically designed to study waves and oscillations, the Atmospheric Imaging Assembly telescope on the Solar Dynamics Observatory, or ROSA camera, which is attached to ground-based telescopes. So now we have, every day we can have several events of this kind. So possibly even, it's continuously and always there, but it's near the very threshold of the resolution of modern observational facilities.
Are they kind of correlated with any particular solar event, like flares or outflows or loops or anything like that?
Yeah, no, it's exactly what I mentioned. So if you have an elastic and compressible medium, any perturbation, any, burst or explosion would cause development of this perturbation in the form of a wave. So certainly solar flares do cause waves and oscillations. But the other way around possibly is also correct. Possibly flares are caused by, are triggered by this, say, waves coming from some remote sites.
And you've said you kind of, you get these perturbations. And what sort of timescales are you, do you look at? How often do they oscillate, I guess?
Mm-hmm. No, if you're asking about the period of oscillation, so the typical period are from few seconds, actually possibly even lower or shorter, so talking about sub-second timescales, and up to, say, tens of minutes, say 10 minutes, 20 minutes. In the stellar megaflare, which I mentioned today, so we are talking about 30-minute period of oscillation. So this is something which is definitely corresponds to our perception. So it's not like, say, several year of period. It's something which we can definitely observe watching the movie or just, say, simply using any instrument.
That's great. And you actually showed a couple of those movies in your talk, and they were, it was very interesting to see it kind of sped up, but sort of in real time, I guess, if that makes sense.
Well, it's not exactly the real time because we need to accelerate so the movies a bit, but it's still almost the real time because, for example, the typical duration of, say, kink oscillation is 1 hour. So the period is several minutes. So meaning that's something which we definitely can watch, so not, well, getting bored and...
So you mentioned kink oscillations just then, and also in your talk you mentioned a few other different types. Now, what kind of differentiates these different types?
No, it's just symmetry of the perturbation. In physics, we always use some kind of simplification, and also we always try to use some specific terminology, so hence this term kink oscillation or sausage oscillation or longitudinal oscillation. It simply refers to the symmetry of the perturbation. For example, in the sausage perturbation, so we have the oscillating structure experiencing the contraction and expansion periodic, but the axis of the structure doesn't change its position. While in the kink oscillation, the actual, say, area of the oscillating structure doesn't change, but the axis goes up and down, or say, west-east.
Are there any of these that you see more often than others? Is there one that's kind of more observable than the others?
Yes, actually, so it's interesting because so something which we keep working on for very long time. So at the moment, it looks like this low amplitude kink oscillations are persistent, meaning so they are always there.
So they don't die out, there's no damping involved?
No, it looks like continuously excited. Likewise, we have propagating longitudinal waves over sunspots, for example, and they're very monochromatic. It looks like there is some kind of maser mechanism, acoustic maser mechanism operating in sunspots. And
so what do you mean by an acoustic maser operation?
Well, I would like to know how it operates exactly, but so we definitely have something very monochromatic emission, so with a period of about 3 minutes, which lasts for several days, maybe even longer, because it can be traced during the, say, passage of the sunspot over the disk of the sun, which takes about, say, 10 days, because the rotation period of the sun is 28 days. So it is definitely a very monochromatic an observation, and there must be some physical mechanism for that. So the only mechanism I can think of is the Maser mechanism.
So by observing these different types of waves and oscillations, what are you able to actually kind of discern about the mm-hmm. sun from that?
Yeah, it's a very good question because it's exactly actually the purpose of the, say, research of my group. So our area of specialization is what we call MHD seismology, meaning so the use of these waves and oscillations to get sometimes unique information about the physical parameters and physical conditions of these plasmas. Actually, so this method of MHD seismology is not only unique for the corona of the sun, it is used in controlled fusion research, in tokamaks in particular, but there it's not called seismology, it's called spectroscopy, MHD spectroscopy, because there they are able to excite some of these modes just artificially.
What do you mean they're able to excite them artificially?
No, in tokamaks they can control, for example, the magnetic field, and they cause the perturbation of the magnetic field, exciting a certain mode.
Oh, okay, so this is like experimental?
Yes, exactly. Okay. Yes, I'm talking about the laboratory plasma reactors. Yes.
Okay.
So also similar oscillations are seen in the magnetosphere of the Earth. Also they are seen in magnetospheres of some satellites like Ganymede. Also in the Jupiter magnetosphere. And now, so we're trying kind of to unify this approach, and in particular, in 2 weeks, so we're running an International Space Science Institute workshop, so just dedicated to the study of MHD waves in the corona of the sun and in the Earth magnetosphere. In August in Moscow, there is the COSPAR General Assembly. It's a major conference, and there will be a two-day session, so dedicated to MHD seismology of space, solar and astrophysical plasmas. And so just trying to unify all this understanding and so combine our efforts.
So this is seen in a massive variety of objects.
Yes.
So I've only heard of them referring to the Sun.
No, also it's seen in, say, stellar objects. It's seen in astrophysical disks. So it's seen in astrophysical jets. So it's something which is very universal, possibly. But only now we kind of approaching the position of being able to combine all in one model and so have this unified understanding.
Sounds like a really exciting time
for
this.
Yes, definitely. Also, possibly I should mention it's a very young science because everything began just 15 years ago. So everything I was talking about, so it's achievement of the kind of very intensive international competition, possibly, but in a good sense, obviously. So just in 15 years.
That's an incredibly short time scale. Because a lot of things often take years and years and years.
Yes.
So what actually kind of sparked it off, do you know, this area? Was it just improvements in instrumentation?
Yes, it was improvement in instrumentation when so the time scales and spatial scales, so which became available for observations, so allowed us to resolve these waves and oscillations in time and in space simultaneously. So that's the crucial, actually, to be able to see the, say, resolve the period of oscillation and the wavelength.
Brilliant.
Yes, and in that time, obviously, we used some instruments dedicated to completely different tasks. So now, for the first time, we have the first dedicated instrument, which is this atmospheric imaging assembly on SDO, so the Solar Dynamics Observatory.
So that's part of the Solar Dynamics Observatory?
It's one of the three instruments, or four instruments on this spacecraft, and so one of four aims of this telescope, or assembly of telescopes, is to study waves and oscillations in the corona.
How long is that telescope going to be up there for? How long is it going to be operational for? Is it kind of quite a long-term project?
No, I think it's 15 years, definitely. So actually, it very much depends upon funding, because it's an American mission, so NASA mission, and I believe you have heard about so this financial difficulties they experienced. So it's so technologically, I think it can stay there for a very long time, say 20 years possibly.
That's excellent.
But how long the funding is going to be available. But so we are looking forward to have new toys to play with. For example, so there is the European Space Agency mission called Solar Orbiter. So it will be launched in 2017 or 2018, possibly. And it's going to dive in the corona of the Sun.
It's going to go actually into the corona.
Yes. So close approach. And so obviously, so we'll have much better resolution. All, say, zoo of associated problems, because obviously the hostile environment, so this radiation of the Sun will be enormous. So hopefully the thermal shield, ceramical shield would survive, but nobody knows. Also the telemetry will be very restricted, because so the spacecraft actually will be very close to the Sun. But hopefully so we'll get something absolutely breakthroughish.
That sounds amazing. Thank you very much for talking to us all about the MHD waves and oscillations in the solar corona.
Okay, thank you very much. So it's my great pleasure.